Have you ever read Noam Chomsky?
I have not, but you're the second person to ask me that in an interview, and now I feel like I better do that like right away because I feel very stupid saying I haven't.
Marginalia. Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to the main topic
in the margin of a book.
Like the protagonist in her book, author Yana Kasali doesn't like to strike matches. Like the protagonist, she moved coast to coast with her tech engineer husband. And like the protagonist, Kasali has never read Noam Chomsky. But don't let these details fool you into thinking that the book is autobiographical. I recently spoke with Yana Kasali about her novel, The Girl Who Never Read Noam Chomsky. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. I started reading The Girl Who Never Read Noam Chomsky last November, and I found it charming and, let me read this to you out loud, funny. And I had to put it aside to meet other deadlines, and I recently reread it from the beginning and continued all the way through. And I found it quiet and thoughtful, unassuming, observant, and notice I'm stopping just short of calling it sinful and true. So, unless I figured your age incorrectly, you seem pretty young. Are you ever described as an old soul?
You know, I was as a child a lot, but I think once you get older, people stop saying that. But when I was a kid, all the time people would say that about me. And I've had a lot of people be surprised that, yeah, I wrote the book in my 20s. So, yeah, I think that because I'm covering such an expanse of time and really going into Rita's later life, that it's a bit odd that someone this young would kind of try to have that introspection into someone as they're aging and at those later points in life. And I certainly was nervous that I wouldn't do justice to that part of her life, because I did feel when I was talking about things that I had lived through that I was really able to bring so much to it because I had really, you know, related so much of it to myself, my own experiences. But, you know, anytime someone does say to me, oh, my God, I can't believe you're so young, I'm like, okay, good. I think I at least pulled it off to some degree.
You were nailing it on so many levels. Now,
let me ask you,
has anybody asked you to read from the book yet, or do you feel comfortable with that?
No, I do feel comfortable with it.
Okay.
I actually did read for it
at Oxford
for our thesis, like our, because I had the book as, I started the book as part of my BFA thesis when I was an undergrad at Emerson College, and then I went right to grad school at Oxford, and then I had to take a break because obviously I had other grad school work to do, and I couldn't work on it. And then for my thesis for grad school, I continued working on it. So at the end of, you know, right before graduation, at the end of the course, they had a reading, and I did a reading of it that went, like, amazingly, and I got tons of people coming up to me and being like, can you send it to me now? Like, just people that liked it, you know, and it was like the most thrill. It was one of like the happiest days of my life. Like, I just loved it. So I love reading out loud because I just think it's a perfect book for that.
I do too. And so the title comes from the opening chapter, deciding to read Noam Chomsky. Lita is in college. She's in a coffee shop and she sees a young man and decides to approach him. That section in the book was so funny. But I would like for you to read it, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. What are you reading? She asked him. What? That book? What? What are you reading? It's by Noam Chomsky? Oh. The silence between them felt stale and all-consuming. She searched for the right segue into marriage and children, but there was nothing.
That part... That's on page 5 of the book. And before that, I had already underlined two things. So, you know, this was this was just a fantastic, fantastic, funny book. But at the same time, it just felt so real. I mean, everything about it felt so real. So, you know, she's in this coffee shop. And you know, Lita, it seems like she had a fear of loneliness. But it also seemed like it was a self-recognized fear. She seemed able to observe those in love or those planning a wedding or those incessantly bragging about their brilliant kids as being really afraid of being alone. So do you think she was pretty self-aware?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wanted to write. I mean, initially when I started the book, I had the desire to write a book about a woman, a character, who's you know, ideologically very feminist, and she like knows everything that's messed up and wrong, and yet she can't really overcome these things in her own life. And she's very aware of the things in her life that aren't right, you know, her desire to look a certain way, or her feelings about her body, or the way she feels so much self-worth when men pay her attention in certain ways. She knows that that's not right, but she still can't bring herself to move past that. And so I really want, it kind of worked out because I also wanted her to be sort of an every woman and be able to be that voice for us as a reader, because I think most women are aware on at least some level of, you know, what those things are in their life. So I wanted to have her aware of it and be able to kind of express it. But of course, for her to also be living it, you kind of have to walk that fine line between awareness and not aware enough, where we're still with her in the moment and she's not just preaching all these things to us. You know, that's kind of that gray area that I was kind of shooting for with her. And so, yeah, she's, you know, kind of our inner voice, I hope, anyway, you know.
Yeah. Now, the book follows Lita from when she was at college throughout her long life, and the chapters are chronological, but some were almost vignette-like in structure. Did it feel like you were writing connected short stories as part of a novel?
No, actually, it really didn't, even though I can totally see why someone would say, you know, I've had a lot of people say that. I had someone say to me, you know, it really feels like this fills a void, like, you know, of short stories and where they can kind of shine as like a novel, and kind of, you know, because a lot of times short stories don't get the kind of attention that they so deserve because so many of them are so beautiful. But when I was actually writing it, I knew it was going to be episodic. I knew these were going to be all little moments. I wanted to focus on these little moments, but I always thought of them as together, connected. And in fact, like, the placement of them is really important to me to make them, you know, I almost structured the book in a sense, like, or I thought of, you know, how when you listen to an album that you love, right? And you love it, you know, like one song, you know what the next song is going to be, and you have like your favorites on the album that you look forward to, and kind of the way that those songs kind of interact with each other and play with each other, and quieter moments and the louder, more fast moments. And I kind of wanted the book to be like that. And so each chapter really leads into the next chapter and kind of works with it, even though you probably aren't conscious of that fully as you're reading. Of course, it has to move the story and the timeline along, but I really just wanted it to move quickly for people so that they could, you know, that's very important to me, momentum, for a reader. And so, so that was just something I gave a lot of thought to. So they really are very connected in that sense, although that isn't something that you would notice. But if you really go back and look, you'll see like a chapter that's maybe more serious is going to be followed by something a little lighter, a chapter that's a bit more, you know, intimate and quiet and, you know, inside of her head. The next would be a bit more social and there's more interaction. So in that sense, they really work together. But they can also be, you could really just read one and kind of, you know, need the others too. You know, there's that element of them as well, but that was less intentional than making it collective, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Now, I read a piece about you on Boston.com from 2011, and when you were getting ready to study at Oxford. The trajectory of your education was not exactly traditional, was it?
No, I have a very untraditional educational background. When I was in high school, I got very ill with an autoimmune illness and I had to drop out, and I was sick for quite a few years, and then I slowly got better. And once I did get better, you know, there really weren't a lot of options for me as far as getting back on track. I had been a good student. I'd been, you know, I was in a very rigorous public school system that was all about, you know, getting there, getting to the top, getting those good schools. And so for me, I was kind of just lost once I was finally healthy enough to be back in school. And so I ended up, the only option that kind of seemed viable was just getting a GED, which is what I did. And then I went to Middlesex Community College, which is a local community college. I grew up in Lexington, and it was local to Lexington. It was in Bedford, Massachusetts. And I started there, and I absolutely loved it. I met some amazing professors who became my friends, my mentors, and just amazing people. And from there, I ended up transferring to Emerson College into a four-year program, and eventually ended up at Oxford. So it was a fight. It was definitely not your normal pathway to getting to Oxford or to getting anywhere, really. But I'm so appreciative for it, because the people I met and, you know, just the experiences I had, I think that are amazing. You know, they're special, and it's just different, you know. And the education I got at my community college, there was so much crossover in the quality of it to what I got at Oxford. So all of it aided each other, and it was just, you know, it's a big part of my story.
Are any parts of the book autobiographical? You know, for example, when did you learn how to strike a match?
Do I know how to strike a match? That's the question. I really don't like striking matches, which is probably why I wrote that. You know, I like to say that all of it is about me and none of it is about me, meaning that some things are literally straight from my life that I wrote right down, but a lot of it is just totally made up, of course. And, you know, a lot of times I would draw from things that my friends would tell me about their own lives, stories from them, or from my mom, their stories from her life that I used, especially as Lita was getting older. And yeah, and then a lot of it was just imagination, you know, what you'd expect of fiction. So it's a bit of a mix. It's definitely not a memoir. Lita is definitely not based on me. In fact, none of the characters are directly based on anybody. She's like me in certain respects, but she certainly isn't like me. Like, I wasn't like, oh, I wouldn't do that, so she can't do that or anything like that. But, you know, I definitely tried to use the best part of drawing from your own life, which is, I think, just honesty. And I think all writers do that to some degree, even if the story they're telling is completely fantastical in every sense, they're still drawing from their own life emotionally or psychologically or whatever feels right.
Body image has a large part in this book. Lita was almost obsessed with the idea of being quote-unquote linear. To be fair, there were times when she accepted her body, but not consistently. Was this topic just an observation of life, or what do you want readers to take away regarding body image?
Yeah, I definitely knew when I first started writing the book that I was going to be talking a lot about that, because, you know, I personally don't know any women that don't struggle with this issue and don't have a really hard time with it. And so I knew I was going to include it. And as I was writing it, I think I tried to keep it minimal to a degree, because I was worried that if there was, you know, a large amount of me talking about body image issues and Lita dealing with her own body image issues, that could be written off in a sense. And then as I was going through the editing process, I actually added in the chapter, the bathing suit chapter, where Lita goes and tries on bathing suits. And that topic is really discussed in depth. And I wrote this into the chapter because I kind of had a bit of an epiphany about it, which is that it is really devastating that essentially, you know, such an enormous part of our population is going around hating their body, which is, you know, their own thing, that is their the vessel for their themselves that they live with, that's theirs, that, you know, is everything really for them. And to think that you spend your whole life kind of hating yourself and chastising yourself and wishing, you know, you were different and trying to make yourself different, it's actually not a small thing. And it's not, you know, vanity the way I kind of was thinking of it. It's not something that we should just be writing off and thinking it's like foolish. And I think the reason I was thinking it was like that is because so much oftentimes things that women struggle with are kind of written off as bit silly and unimportant. And I think women will feel that way. They're not going to be like, you know, I've spent my whole life hating my thighs and it's not right. You know, it's more like, I spent my whole life hating my thighs, but I won't talk about them. You know, I know it's silly, da 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 da. It's like, well, it's not silly. I mean, you shouldn't be feeling that way about your body. And the fact that you do feel that way about your body is really sad. And why so many women are struggling like that in this very monumental way, ultimately, is devastating.
You know, the book is so nuanced. I mean, so thought-provoking on every page. How long did it take you to write it?
You know, that's a good question, because I really don't have the answer for it. I mean, like I said, I started it as an undergrad, so I wrote it for a few months my, you know, senior year of college, and then I wrote it for about half a year in grad school, and then afterwards I worked on it for a couple of years. So I'm going to say 2.5 years, but in reality it was such a long expanse because I had to take so many breaks while I was finishing school and everything. But yeah, that's the number I go with.
Now, the dedication page reads, "This book is dedicated to my mother, the greatest woman I know." What would you like for readers to know about your mom?
Yeah, actually, I should say in the final, I changed it. The one you have, balance and relationship. I'm not dedicating it to my mom. No, I'm just kidding. I just wrote, did I write exactly? I should get it right. I just said this book is dedicated to my mom.
Okay.
And I think I just wanted to simplify it because I always found whenever I read books and it was like a really simple dedication, it would like make me start tearing up, which is ridiculous. Like it'll be like for John and then I'll just start crying. And I'm like, well, I don't know this person. But I would want you to know that my mom is just the greatest person. She's just, she's really kind. And I think that, you know, she always stressed being kind to other people as being the most important thing you can be as a person. And I just think that it's one of those things that we don't think about enough, you know, kindness and what a huge part of success that really is. And, you know, I look at her even now and I just see her always having this level of empathy for everyone and trying to always be caring towards other people in a way that I think isn't easy. It doesn't come naturally to most people. And I just love her for that. I mean, I think it's like a form of brilliance.
We've talked about quite a bit, but is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
I will say that I think if I look at this book now, looking at it as it's coming out and it's completely finished, it's really finished, I think, well, what is my intention with this book? And I really hope that this book can make people just feel less lonely in their lives. And that's really my objective with it. And now that I'm at this point, I can really see that that's kind of been my objective all along, even maybe when I didn't know it was the case.
Have you ever read Noam Chomsky?
I have not. But you're the second person to ask me that in an interview, and now I feel like I better do that, like, right away, because I feel very stupid saying I haven't.
I think you're fine.
I mean, it's not, I did buy the book, which is actually the book that she buys, and I reference in the book, is actually a book of speeches, I believe, of his. It's not, like, a book that he set out and wrote, so I'm, I have that, and I should read it because that's the book she wants to read. So,
that was Janneke Solly, author of the book The Girl Who Never Read Noam Chomsky, which was published by Knopf. You can discover new episodes of Marginalia at kmuw.org or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And if you enjoy it, consider rating or reviewing it. Marginalia is produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.